Okay.
Let me first thank the organizers for organizing this program. It's been great. I have a long list of problems to work on. As a mathematician, my time scale is usually much longer than I think those of scientists. What I've been working on the last several years is more related to what Ron Miller's talked about, atomistic continuum coupling methods. I have a poster back there. And I think in this field, again, I had a slow startup. I went and visited Rob Phillips in France, and then maybe a few years later, things really started going. And I think at this point, we have a fairly good sort of theoretical description of the error. Ron mentioned his benchmark tests and all the different methods. And so what we strive for, and that's now related to this talk in a minute too, is some kind of precise description of the error in the case of atomistic continuum methods, of all the different methods. And based on having a precise understanding of error, then we can see where, how to optimize the method, how to choose parameters appropriately. Normally, error has many different pieces, and normally the best method sort of equilibrates all the different approximations. So through this process, we can actually improve methods quite a bit. There's, of course, a long history of that. And the overall kind of philosophy is to sort of identify a computational goal and then try to, of course, compute with the minimal degrees of freedom, the minimal computational complexity. Of course, this requires an understanding of the problems you're solving. So this is sort of the philosophy that I take. This is sort of a fairly new direction for me. And it's actually is motivated by hot QC and these applications. One of the goals is, of course, is after you have, say, hot QC, then you need to do dynamics. And we've been collaborating with Art Voder and Danny Perez and their team and trying to utilize accelerated dynamics. So we've kind of developed this theory for, again, the lattice statics problem. And so now we're trying to develop the sort of theoretical foundations for accelerated dynamics, and then hopefully we can combine this and really have a similar kind of analysis and theory for hot QC dynamics. So the collaboration, I think, has been quite successful. There's usually four or five emails going around every day, and it's been very exciting. So let me start in on this. We've heard, many talks about coarse graining, and I'm going to focus here on coarse graining in time. And the particular method I'm going to sort of study is the parallel replica algorithm. So this method, many of you may know it. It was proposed by Art Voder. And I must say, the original papers of Voder are still very readable. And very relevant. I mean, a lot of times, some fields, the initial papers tend to be irrelevant after a while. These papers are very carefully written. They're very much written from the point of view of a theoretical chemist, of a physicist, which Art Voder is. And I know when I first conceived of this project, I went to speak to Art, and he was kind of sort of wondering, like, what's a mathematician? What can you do in this field? It's not clear. I had that same experience when I started working on atomistic continuum methods. I think it was Noam Bernstein's who kind of wondered what I was doing in this business. But eventually, in both cases, there has been a real genuine collaboration, I think, an appreciation of the different points of view. So again, now one of the issues right off the bat you'll see is I'm really going to be talking about overdamped Langevin dynamics. So this is what we have the most detailed and precise sort of theory for. Voder is normally doing Langevin in the low friction case. We haven't got there. We've had a lot of, again, discussions with different language trying to reconcile. Okay, so the idea here is, again, this relates to many of the talks, let me just kind of formalize it here, is that we have our configuration space, and we want to sort of divide it up into various states, and we have this mapping S. And so S, is, again, is mapping configuration space to states. We could think of numbering the potentials. And the aim is to essentially just generate a state-to-state dynamics, a Markov chain dynamics, that has the same law as the original continuous dynamics. Okay, and so there's questions both of time and state-to-state dynamics. Okay, so what I want to do here is first run you through a very simplified version of the algorithm. Then I'll do it again on a little more fine-tuned algorithm. Ultimately, what Voder and his team have achieved is they've achieved an algorithm that is utilizing the parallel processing, you know, using all the processors all the time. I mean, that's the goal. The algorithm I'm going to describe here doesn't do that. But this is, again, this is just a way to start to sort of understand the various sources of error. Okay. So again, if I have some kind of notation that's not apparent to people, please let me know. I've also been trying to reconcile the language of stochastics and mathematics, and that in physics and chemistry. I was looking at this book by Gardner. I don't know if that's a good reference, seeing what, as sort of a state of what people would know in physics. So in any case, let's consider we have some kind of initial condition. We call it a reference walker. And that's in, let's say, well zero. And we set our simulation time counter to zero. Then the algorithm, again, it goes through three steps, and I'm going to describe them now in a sequential process, but really we want them working all the time, all together. Okay, so the first step, and this is really the genius of the method, and what makes it really accurate, and I'll show you what later, make that more precise, it's this decorrelation step. Okay, this is what's sort of correcting the Markov chain approximation you might otherwise get. Okay, so the idea is, I'm going to have some graphics in a minute to make this a little more clear, is we have this reference walker, and we want him to evolve over some correlation time. Okay, and one of the goals of our theory is to predict this, is to have this correlation time or decorrelation time as small as possible, but large enough to have accuracy. So again, I'll try to make that precise. Anyway, if the process leaves the well, so you're entering a new well. If the process leaves that well before it's decorrelated, okay, then we don't go into this parallel stage. We haven't decorrelated, and we just essentially update the clock by tau core. And continue on. Okay, so if tau core was huge, was infinity, you'd never do parallel dynamics. You would just do serial dynamics. Otherwise, you advance the simulation clock by tau core, and now we proceed into the parallel stage. Okay, so here we are. We've entered this new well, and we're wiggling around here. And so we assume that we've sort of lost memory. We've kind of decorrelated in that well. Okay, and so now we duplicate this walker into n replicas, and we let these replicas evolve independently and in parallel over some time tau fades. Okay, now what I'm going to show you in a few minutes is precisely what this dephasing step is doing. What we really are doing is trying to approximate a distribution Okay, I'm going to really make that very precise. So that's part of the analytic advance we've made, is to make this stage really precise. Now we have these n replicas, and this is a little technical detail here. If one of these replicas leaves the well, then we just somehow restart that replica somewhere else, because we really want n replicas to start the parallel stage. So the clock is not going here. What we're doing here is just creating essentially a distribution within that well. Okay, so again, here we are. We've finished this decorrelation stage. Okay, and now we send off a replica, and then we end up here, and that one was bad. So in the end, we have all these little red states. Okay, so now we have n replicas spread out throughout that well. Okay, and now we're ready for the parallel step. Okay, in the parallel step, we essentially let the replicas run, and the first replica that exits, let's have it labeled by K0. Okay, then what we do is we update our time by n times t, right, where t was the time at which the first replica exited. So we had n processors working, n replicas searching around, trying to exit, and it's as if they're all one long trajectory. And so when the first one exits, we just multiply the time it took by n, and then add that to the clock, and we update our state. Okay. Then at this stage, this is really the power. If you've actually decorrelated in a well, and you've created n replicas, and you run those, and you're running those in parallel, and then the first one that exits, you get this speed up of n. Okay. So. So this guy has exited. This is our distinguished replica. Okay. We detect this the first transition. Update the clock, and then at that point we're ready to start a new sort of decorrelation stage where we start our sort of serial computation. This algorithm. Okay. So let's look at that parallel step. There's some error associated with that parallel step. Okay, if the escape time for each replica, and they're all independent, if they were each exponentially distributed, right, then the min would also be exponentially distributed, and its essentially law would just be n times one of the other replicas. But that's assuming that we had this, that we've actually created these n replicas have this property. Okay, and further, the exit position, the hitting point, is actually independent of the escape time. So what I'm going to show you here is, and I think it's fairly, I think it can be, it's actually fairly simple, but I think you can see how, you know, what is the error introduced by this algorithm. Okay, so again, I'm going to redo this. Different collaborators have different graphics. I like to show them all. We have our decorrelation step. The reference process samples the well for some time. Dephasing step. Create the independent replicas to further sample the well. And then we have our parallel step. Okay, so here, just, okay. So again, run for tau core. Maybe I should have gone back there. We enter the new well. Run for tau core. If your trajectory leaves the well, you begin again in the new well, okay, to essentially enter the parallel stage, this tau core must be chosen, at least to enter the parallel stage accurately, tau core must be long enough for it to forget its previous state. And again, if you choose tau core too long, right, then you'll never essentially decorrelate in a state, and you'll always be in a serial mode. So that's the sort of the, so for tuning the algorithm, it's this tau core that really needs to be appropriately chosen. Okay, now, okay, this is a slightly different, slight variant of what I just showed you before, and so now what I want to do is, instead of, so I have this reference walker, instead of waiting for the reference walker to decorrelate and then starting the replicas, I can start those replicas at any time. And I can start them immediately upon entering the new well. We could let those replicas run, and if in fact we've decorrelated, we'll have the end replicas created at the same time that we've been decorrelating. If we haven't decorrelated in that well, we just throw all that work away, but everybody's working. So now we've just by this kind of little observation, we can have the time. Okay, so these are essentially related user parameters. So again, first process K star, we advance the simulation clock by N times the exit time of K star. Okay, and here's another little schematic, a little 1D schematic of, okay, here's our well, right? We choose a T launch so that we don't, these replicas don't exit the area all the time. We have to restart that. So let's say we get to this point here after some little short time, and then we set off N trajectories. Meanwhile, I've got my reference walker continuing to sort of decorrelate in the well. And so again, if one of the replicas exited, I just restart it, that's the second replica, then I just restart it. So in the end, I end up at this stage. See, I end up at this stage here. This is the stage at which I enter the parallel stage. In this case, I have, well, three replicas, and I still have this reference walker. And now here's the first replica that exits, and now I'm gonna multiply the time by N in that stage. Okay, so now let me just give you a little flavor of the mathematics. Okay, these are just sort of the kind of the goals. Okay, so what we're interested in is, okay, so given that we've entered a well W, we'd like to determine the properties of the exit distribution and the hitting point distribution, and we'd like to know to estimate the accuracy and optimize the efficiency of the method. Okay, so I claim you can really understand this whole method just from the Fokker-Planck equation. Okay, so this is the now, if you go back and look at our papers, we use something called Feynman-Katch theorem or backward Kolmogorov, and I'm starting to learn that maybe this is not as, people are not as comfortable with that as what we call the forward Kolmogorov or the Fokker-Planck equation. I mean, it's actually harder to do the analysis this way, but it's easier to understand it. So, okay, so here's our overdamped Langevin equation, right? And so the key thing is we want to solve this on the on our domain W with absorbing boundary conditions. Okay, that's the key, right? Because really what's going on, when we have those N replicas, okay, think about what's going on. We're evolving. When one replica exits, we're essentially going to throw it back in somewhere. Okay, so that's equivalent to absorbing boundary conditions and essentially kind of normalizing the density. So really what we're really doing is solving the Fokker-Planck equation with absorbing boundary conditions and then renormalizing. Okay, so this is a unnormalized solution, right, to the Fokker-Planck equation. The lambda j's are the eigenvalues, the cj's are the eigenfunctions. And so eventually as time evolves, right, we're going to essentially just see the first eigenfunction, which is a positive function, and the lambda 1 we know, right, is the mean exit time. So again, just to review what we know about this, so all the information for this algorithm is really right here, right? We have an exit density through a point on the boundary at a given time, right? We could compute first exit time densities, first hitting point densities. So all the analytic information to analyze actually both the decorrelation stage and the dephasing stage is right here in this Fokker-Planck equation. So in the decorrelation stage, right, what we'd like to do is we'd like that the trajectory to have essentially sampled, right, the distribution at infinity for this Fokker-Planck equation. So that's this limiting distribution. This is what we'd like the decorrelation to sample, and this is what we want to create with this dephasing stage. What we really want to do is to sample the first eigenfunction of the Fokker-Planck equation, right? And so, that parabolic equation, the Fokker-Planck equation, at large time, right? It's going to be approximated by this, by its, by the slowest mode, right? And this is it. And this mode, right, has an exit density, right? That's exponential, which is what we wanted. Remember, we wanted an exponential exit time, okay? And we wanted the hitting point distribution to be independent of the exit time. So we have it right in front of us. All the required properties to essentially understand the error, and is actually right here in this limiting solution to the Fokker-Planck equation. Okay. So one can this is called the quasi-stationary distribution. It can be kind of formulated abstractly. I mean, for the Langevin equation, right? It just says that a quasi-stationary distribution is one such that if you start it and you essentially evolve it and you throw away escaping particles and renormalize, you get the same distribution. It's a stationary under this kind of process. Okay, so I claim that this quasi-stationary distribution is that distribution that has an exponential law for escape, right? And it has an independent hitting point. Okay, so the utility, of course, right, is that once we've dephased, ideally, we would have n IID processes, independent processes, all exponentially distributed, and each with its exit time independent of the hitting point. Okay, and if we have this, then in fact if we look at this new distribution that's given by the first exit, right, then NT has the same law, the same statistics for time as the first as any of the other independent processes, and we have the same distribution of hitting points. So think about this. If in fact you didn't have that decorrelation stage, if you just said you didn't run the clock, you just whenever you entered a new well, you immediately created N IID processes with the QSD distribution, then you'd have a Markov chain, a kinetic Monte Carlo model, but that model would not be correct because you would have missed all that decorrelation time, and you'd miss the time where the particle has to get to the bottom and decorrelate. You'd miss the fact that some of those trajectories don't even stay in the well long enough to decorrelate. So as I started out by saying, it's including that tau core in the clock that really makes this accurate. Otherwise, just from this, we would have a Markov chain model. So again, the goal of the decorrelation dephasing step is to produce these end processes that are as close as possible to this quasi-stationary distribution. Okay. So again, now this I apologize for the abstract formulation, and I even used the word theorem here, which there's some arguments as to whether this is okay. Isn't the title of the program physical, multi-scale based on physical, what's the title of the three-month program? Physical principles, okay. So sorry about that. Okay, so let's, okay, this is essentially, okay, all this, really everything is there in that Fokker-Planck operator, and you could see that the convergence to the limiting distribution is really governed by the spectral gap between the second eigenvalue and the first eigenvalue. But to make it all fancy, we have a theorem, and that just says that if we have any function of exit time and exit position, and we ask, okay, nu means this quasi-stationary distribution, if I really started from the correct distribution that truly has exponential escape, and I compare that to what I get from this parallel replica business where I don't really truly sample, then this just says the error is bounded by some notion of how close the initial distribution is to the quasi-stationary. Okay, and so this actually, I got a question on this earlier. It's actually not a norm, I guess it's a metric, but I'm just trying to use a cartoon theorem, really. So it just says how close is my initial state to the quasi-stationary, but the main thing is that we see that the rate of convergence is exponential in the spectral gap. So anyway, so this theorem measures the difference, measures how we are converging to this quasi-stationary distribution.
Okay.
Pardon? Oh, small t is okay. Mu naught could actually be a delta function on the boundary. Okay. So now you've entered the well, let's think about decorrelation. Then that one trajectory is, if you look at its what the how it's sampling the well, then after time t, this is its distribution. Okay. And I'm asking how well have we sampled the quasi-stationary distribution by running by running for time t. Okay. So we know this is going to converge to nu that by the spectral gap, and this just says, you know, how do functions that depend on the exit time and exit position depend on this error. Okay, so in any case, just to emphasize again, we have exponential convergence with decorrelation time scale 1 over lambda 2 minus lambda 1, and of course we know that the mean first exit time scale is like 1 over lambda 1, so for this algorithm, right, to be at least to have a strong theoretical basis, we need to have this condition. Right. It just says that the time for decorrelation needs to be much smaller than the time for exit, or the parallel stage would have no time to really do its work. Right. Now, one of the things we've been doing is studies on various domains W and various potentials to determine when we have such a property, and so that's really, of course, crucial. Many people ask questions about, this is true if you have nice deep wells, okay, and I can even show you some numerical experiments. If you have sort of, kind of wells that are more entropic, then the decorrelation time might be comparable to the first exit time. So this is at least from our theoretical point of view, this is the key feature you need. Okay, and also with this kind of estimate, I'll talk about this too. One of the things we're trying to do is trying to figure out, I mean, this is just a bound. What we really want is a numerical kind of adaptive approach to estimate when we've decorrelated sufficiently to stop this process. Okay, so now, so I mentioned this is just some abstract result with some function of exit time and exit position, and by choosing appropriate Fs, we can get estimates on the error in the first exit time, okay, and we can get errors on the exit point distribution. So these are essentially our error estimates of for this method. Yes. Oh, my God. Very good. Okay. Let's see.
I gave you a couple minutes.
Okay, okay.
Somebody asked a question.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yeah, so now this is, in a way, this is maybe even more interesting. This says that, like I said, if you had n independent replicas, and each of them had this essentially had this quasi-stationary distribution, then in fact the parallel step itself would be exact, right? I'm saying when the first replica exits, I'm multiplying the clock by n, but that there's an error if you don't really have the quasi-stationary distribution, you know, which we don't have in any finite time computation. And so this is just saying if I actually have some estimate of the error from the after this decorrelation stage, then this is just an estimate of the error of not having an exponential law. So that's so that's what we've been trying to do here. So again, this is saying the factor n speed up is what we get. Okay, so a few remarks. The method, of course, for tau core going to infinity, we have the shrinking error, and the method does actually literally converge. Okay, now, so essentially to estimate the error, we need to know lambda 2 and lambda 1, right? Now, we don't really want to solve a high-dimensional eigenvalue problem, so we're currently investigating ways of approximating this spectral gap on the fly. Things like studying rates of convergence with respect to various observables. We also haven't given you a result of the error over many cycles. Okay, I'm just talking about essentially what we're doing within one well. So we don't have a good analysis of this or even a precise notion of error. We're also again studying Langevin extensions. Let me just run the experiments. Okay, so I'm going to run very quickly. So at this point, we're really in 1D kind of little models. Here's just a sinusoidal well, and so K is governing the depth of the wells. And then we also study. Okay, so let me just. So this is just showing as K gets large, the spectral gap increases. As that's just depth of wells, as you expect. I'm not going to do this. This is showing how fast we will converge to this quasi-stationary distribution. So if you want to create a quasi-stationary distribution, then just take 10,000 particles, I'll put them at the bottom of the well, run them independently. When any trajectory escapes the well, put a new trajectory, throw that one away and put a new one in randomly among the other 9,999. You run that, and eventually those 10,000 particles are going to recreate this distribution that I'm saying is the ideal distribution. Okay, so we also study. So although we don't have analytic results, we were asking questions about what happens if we go through this process for 10 wells, right? So we've done studies of as I mentioned, this choosing this correlation time is really the key for accuracy and efficiency. And we've and the analytic results, of course, show if you don't do sufficiently long decorrelation time, then you don't get good accuracy. We've studied performance, speed up. Let me just run through. I will come to the end. So again, it does appear to converge as the tau core goes to infinity over many wells. Of course, it is more efficient when the scale separation is large. The hitting time distribution seems to be converging faster than the state-to-state dynamics. I didn't have time to really show you that picture, and we are studying these various other generalizations. So thank you very much.
I think you mentioned something about when you had a special walker, reference walker, I guess.
Yeah.
And the reference walker enters one of your new, goes over a barrier, enters your new well.
Mm-hmm.
you apparently wanted to wait a while before you were convinced that it was committed to being in that well or something like that.
Exactly.
Is that right? Okay. And if that walker were to come back out relatively quickly,
mm-hmm.
you would sort of abort that process, right?
Exactly. I would just, okay. I would add in the time. The time he comes in, he comes out, we add that time to the clock. Okay.
And it's as if that means he was really back in his original well for that period of time, but it wasn't clear because it looked like he'd make a small excursion, right?
You could say he was in the original well, but the important thing is that we've added that time to the clock.
Okay.
That is added to the clock.
Right. Now, when you've got your distribution of water, suppose you say this guy has committed himself, and you've set up all these others that are roaming around.
Yeah.
If one of those leaves the well, you essentially say, well, he's gone, and you try to put him somewhere else in the well to re-equilibrate, right?
Okay, well, the purpose of that is, so that stage, the clock's not running. Okay. At that point, we've said, okay, we've decorrelated. He could be anywhere. Where that reference walker is kind of... It's like an initial condition for this next phase, but it's not really important. You know, what we really want is that quasi-stationary distribution. If somebody just gave you that distribution and you had any way of sampling that, we're doing it by dynamics, but you could any way you want to sample it, that's fine. We just want to say that once we've decorrelated, this is the distribution, the ideal distribution, and you want to approximate that. Okay, and then the fact when the guy left the well, I went and put him somewhere else. There are many, many ways to do this. We're just creating this distribution.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but how do you choose where to put him?
Okay, there are many ways to do that. There's a whole industry of this quasi-stationary distribution. Putting him randomly is the safest.
Okay. What do you mean by randomly? What distribution are you sampling?
Well, you have your 10,000. What I'm telling you is the safest from the analytic point of view. There are other approaches that may not, there's maybe questionable. They're the independence of because you want these to be independent.
Sure.
You want these 10,000 replicas to be independent. So there are.
So what do you actually do? How do you choose the position? What's a way of putting it in that well?
Okay. Well, you know, we use something called Fleming VO, which
What does that mean in terms of sampling? I mean, you're choosing. You've got a distribution that you're sampling from. Is that it? It's a well-defined distribution that you're sampling from?
We're creating that distribution. Yeah.
And how do you create it?
Well, I told you we're just doing little. We're doing baby problems. You know, how Voter does it. I'm not 100% sure.
Here's what bothers me. Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that you know if something were to leave, you've got to put it back into the well.
Yeah.
And you. But if it leaves and it really didn't want to go away, suppose if you were to continue, you'd find it coming back in again. Just like then you would want to say that one really didn't really want to, wasn't really leaving, because it came back in again so quickly.
If you allow him to come back, then you're not going to be computing this quasi-stationary distribution.
Well, that's what I'm concerned about. If you remove him immediately as he gets to the surface,
mm-hmm.
you're depleting the population near the boundary of your region.
Yeah, but new guys are coming to the boundary from
right.
the interior.
Yes, I understand that. But the point is, it sounds like I'm afraid that if you're trying to learn, that's why I don't know what distribution you're adding it to. But if you're using your experience as to where these particles are to create that distribution, and you've been depleting your distribution at the boundary, it sounds like you might be making a statistical error. And that's why I'm wanting to know whether you're using your experience as to where these particles are to create your distribution or not. And if you are, and if you're systematically removing things from the boundary, you may be systematically distorting your distribution and continuing that distortion.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys
maybe we should.
No, that's a really important part of the algorithm. Very. And I know people. There are things people try to bias. various ways that are what we do is actually analytically, or at least we actually compute out in our little toy problems. We're computing out, because 1D, we can compute with spectral methods, actually compute the distribution and sample it directly. So we're not actually doing it through, but that's just for our little numerical experiments. Oh, okay, sorry about that. Yes.
Okay, if I understand correctly, you're sampling the exit time distribution by taking one point, that is, say, the first guy who exits.
Yes.
Suppose you take 2 points, the first two guys that exit. Wouldn't that give a better grasp of that distribution?
So do some kind of
just
use that extra information.
Let the first guy exit, and then wait for the second guy.
And maybe you could have some
fit to an exponential.
And we could have some correction.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting idea. That's a good idea.
Well, I've tried it, and it actually does work pretty well. I just wanted to mention. I just wanted to wonder if anyone else had.
Okay, very good.
One of the very practical question. So you did not talk about the effect of n. So you can choose n as large as possible. N.
Yes, n is the number of replicas.
And so you say that the acceleration is proportional to n.
Exactly.
So you can make n as large as possible.
As large as there's a computer that can do it. Yeah. So I think voters done. Danny and Perez have done computations on these large Los Alamos machines, Roadrunner, tens of thousands of, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to shortly come back to the question just raised before. There are several things where I'm not sure how robust the technique is relative to it. The first is, does something in the algorithmic analysis tells you how to choose the dephasing time, because that's one of the parameters which
yes.
has to be chosen. And without insight into the quasi-stationary distribution or its eigenvalues, all the things you cannot compute, how would you choose the time? That's the first question. And relative to the discussion before, is everything robust with respect to the choice of the boundary of the wells? Because the exit is detected at the boundary. Okay, if the boundary is somewhere in a transition region, and the boundary can be here or there, and the exit time will change. And the question is whether this changes the entire approximation or not.
Okay. Well, okay, the way the actual domains W, they're getting it just by, they're just attracting basins. They're just doing, energy minimization to see whether they've entered a new well. Okay, that's how they're choosing. But it's a good question as to how robust this is. Your other question was, estimating the proper decorrelation. So what we're doing, and I have some graphs I could even show you. We're trying to study. Just some observable, trying to study how it's converging to get some estimate of lambda 2 minus lambda 1. So you can choose V itself, or you could, the optimal one is actually the second eigenfunction if you think about it. But okay, how it's being done in practice. So again, we just had an email on this one from Danny Perez. They use some kind of fundamental harmonic frequency and some time scale they know from the system, or they just have experience. They have their ways of doing it. I'm not 100% sure. We're trying something that has based less on having a lot of experience in physical problems, more on kind of a more numerical analysis, mathematical approach. So. That is a key question for efficiency and accuracy, exactly.
My question is very much related to the previous one. You have to choose this correlation time somehow to avoid this correlated recrossings.
Yes.
So once you have chosen a certain time, is there a diagnostic to decide whether, after you have done the simulation, to decide whether this was the right time that you have chosen, that it was sufficiently long?
Right. Okay, I don't know such a diagnostic. That's part of what we're trying to do. Yes. That's the kind of questions that we are asking.
So you can do that on the flight, basically?
We're trying to figure out ways to do this, yeah.
My question is also a continuation of a number of previous questions, and this is about the structure of boundaries between worlds. In reality, these boundaries are likely to be, first of all, multidimensional, but also not smooth. And if they are fractal, then the structure of spectrum is more complicated than just lambda 1 and lambda 2. And my guess is that what happens is you have a group of eigenvalues, of large eigenvalues, and the good case scenario is there is another group of smaller eigenvalues, and you have a gap not between lambda 1 and lambda 2, but a group of lambdas and another group of lambdas. And my question is whether your mathematics can be generalized for such a more sophisticated thing, in which case your independence of exit points would be independence on a certain scale. You do not really have independent exit points on this fractal, complicated shoreline of Norway, but you have independence on some coarse grain sense. So is that possible to generalize your mathematics?
Well, that's a good project for us to consider. I mean, what we've, the nice model problems where this really does work are things like, you know, surface, atoms on a surface, where you really have, you know, fairly well-defined deep wells. But I know in biomolecules and things like that, yeah, there's that you have more complicated structure, such as you're mentioning, but definitely something we should look at.
You could entertain another question.
Okay, yeah, now if you have one of these fairly well-defined problems and you compare that with just plain kinetic Monte Carlo, have you done that? I mean, how much better is your method?
Okay, well, the problem with kinetic Monte Carlo is you have to know all the transitions, right? One of the arguments for parallel replica is, and there are cases, I mean, Voder mentions these various cases mm-hmm. where people didn't even know about certain transitions, way atoms move on a surface. And so this automatically finds, you know, all the transitions. Kinetic Monte Carlo, you have to have a catalog, right?
But basically, if you assume that you have an exponential distribution of exit times, you assume that there is only one transition barrier. Isn't that the assumption? Or maybe I didn't understand that.
Well, okay. If in fact you have a kinetic Monte Carlo model and it is a correct model, mm-hmm. then certainly it'll be much faster than this.
Yeah.
But this is supposed to. This is available when you don't need to know all that information, okay?
Yeah, but let's say you assume that you have one barrier, and what you do is you take your first exit time and you sort of rescale it. In kinetic Monte Carlo, you would just rescale it. Instead of rescaling it, you would just draw a new number according to the exponential which would sort of depend on your first exit time. So it would be a rather similar method, but I understood the main difference is this decorrelation time.
Well, yeah. This method doesn't require you to know yeah. any rates or any, or even know what all the different transitions are. I mean, mm-hmm. this doesn't require the kind of knowledge that you have in kinetic Monte Carlo.
Okay, so.
But if you did, like I said, if you had that information, then yes, that it'll definitely dominate this.
All right. I think we should thank our speaker. We're going to reconvene at 11.
And just to remind you, there's posters here that are going to be up through the rest of the meeting, and feel free to patronize them.